customer sovereignty and human-centered marketing. They both represent a rebellion. One against conventional business thinking, and one against bad marketing.
This is the Economics for Entrepreneurs podcast, a project of the Mises Institute, applying the principles of economics to start, grow, and manage your business. For free tools, resources, key takeaways, and actionable insights from each episode, visit Mises.org/E4EPod. Now, here's Hunter Hastings.
Hi, Hunter Hastings here. Today we have a terrific discussion about marketing that has the potential to change your entire thinking about how you do business. Two things about marketing. First, it's inseparable from business management. It's not to be segregated or made a separate function or an add-on at the end of the design and production processes. It's not just marketing communications, and it's definitely not marketing technology. It's a focus on customer value that permeates your entire business and your every process. It is business. Second, the overlap between Austrian economics and marketing is almost total. And they can both enhance your business enormously. They can be the difference makers in your success. The first core element of Austrian economics is its humanism. It's about people. When you put people first, you begin to understand their motivations, what drives them, what they value, and indeed how they experience value. How value is a feeling that they long for, that they live for. Economics provides us with the principles of how to understand people's search for value, and marketing provides us with the mechanisms to deliver that feeling of value, to aid people in their value search and in their value experience, and therefore in their lives. Economics is value logic, and marketing is value logic in action. If you get economics and marketing both right, you reach new heights. You understand people's innermost values, and you facilitate their realizing those values. Now that may sound superhuman, but actually, you just have to be human, very human. In fact, today's guest is here to tell us that the most human company wins. He is Mark Schaefer, one of the world's most recognized marketing authorities. His clients have included businesses from small to large to global, and his advice and his insights are valued by all of them. He's written books that help us in brand building, in social media marketing, and influencer marketing, content marketing, and personal branding. He has led and collated many groundbreaking research projects that advance marketing thinking. When the question concerns marketing, the answer comes from Mark Schaefer. Mark, welcome to Economics for Entrepreneurs.
I am delighted to be here, Hunter. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's our honor and pleasure. I'm going to try to recruit you as an aligned thinker in our brand of economics, Mark. And a few weeks ago, it was episode 40, we compiled a top 10 list of what we thought were the business applicable concepts of our brand of economics. We called it Menger's Manifesto, and I'll make it available to anybody who wants to get it from our website. And the number one item on that list was humanism. That our economics is about people, it's about their choices, it's about their hopes and dreams, and how entrepreneurs can cater to those hopes and dreams. And then your book comes along, Marketing Rebellion, where you say the most human company wins. You have a manifesto for human-centered marketing. And so let's start there in this intersection on the subject of humanism. And tell us what your concept is, Mark, if you would, of human companies and human-centered marketing.
Well, I think it's a very simple idea. You know, you and I were talking a little bit before the show was recording about your days several decades ago with Procter & Gamble and how we were very focused on the consumer needs, and we're practically living in their homes. And then we sort of got into this era of mass marketing and advertising. And today we're in a marketing era where we're really obsessed with technology. And technology, in many respects, has become the bane of good marketing and branding, not because technology is bad, but because it's so good, it's so easy, it's so prevalent, it's intoxicating, it's cheap, it's even fun. And we love sort of, you know, we love algorithms and we love automating things and taking people out of it. And we're sort of in a place today where we're kind of hiding behind these dashboards and this automation and these algorithms. And we're forgetting some of the fundamentals about why people buy from us and what they really expect. And on the, you know, on the consumer side, their expectations have changed too, because they're in control. They don't need our ads. And increasingly, they don't see our ads. People are watching TV on Netflix or on Amazon Prime. They don't see ads. They're listening to music all the time on Spotify. They don't hear ads. They don't hear ads in audiobooks where they're spending a lot of time. They've got ad blockers on their smart devices. And so there's this consumer rebellion going on, really, that they're in charge. They're in charge of the customer journey. They're in charge of whatever's left of what might be called a sales funnel. And so they're demanding to be respected. They're demanding that we meet them on their terms. And the smartest companies out there, we've got to listen. Because as I show in the book, the consumers always win. And so we don't have a choice. We've got to rethink how we're approaching marketing, which has been so technology-based. You know, we're obsessed with our MarTech stack, trying to understand that instead of trying to understand consumers.
Well, that's a great summary, Mark, and an ambitious agenda. So let's see if we can go through it. You mentioned the consumers always win. In economics, we call that consumer sovereignty. And your language is so much better than ours, but the principles.
I love that word, sovereignty. I'm gonna start using that one instead.
Good. Let's market it. You mentioned one of these items in your list of human values. In fact, you call them constant human truths, mm-hmm, so they apply mm-hmm. all the time.
Yeah.
That customers want to feel loved. Mm-hmm. They want to belong. They want to be respected. They want you to advance their self-interest, and they want proof that you contribute to their community. Mm-hmm, tell us a little bit more about those highest values, that the constant human truths, and how you see them, Mark.
Well, I think it's an anchor in this world to hang on to. One of the things that's exciting and overwhelming at the same time about marketing is the rate of change. And it can be really intimidating. And I think we can take a lesson from Jeff Bezos at Amazon, who had a very famous interview that was in Wired magazine. And the reporter asked him, well, Jeff, what's the next technology that is so exciting to you? And he said, well, that's a very interesting question. But the more important question is what's not changing, because that's where you can build your business. He said, I know people want a low price, they want vast selection, and they want fast delivery. It's impossible for me to think that 10 years from now, people would be using Amazon and asking us to pay more. And yeah. I think that's how we make sense of the marketing world today, is that instead of being really lashed about by rapid change, this unbelievable change that really no one understands completely anymore, that we hold on to the things that aren't changing, these deep, deep human needs that have always been there since the beginning of commercial activity, and we've just lost sight of it because we've hold ourselves up into our offices surrounded by all this technology. And it's mm-hmm. these things that you mentioned, Hunter. It's, people want to be acknowledged. They want to find meaning in their lives. They want to be loved. They want to belong. And it's a new way to sort of think about the world and marketing. But I think it's the only way that really we can make sense of it right now.
Well, good. And we're going to try in the next few minutes to help our entrepreneurs, Mark, to figure out how they can do that. I wanted to drill down on one of your constant truths, and that's the need to belong. And you also contrast it, I think, with the way sometimes in marketing we talk about building a community. And in fact, you say, hey, you can't build a community for consumers or customers. You've got to be of their community. So please explain this idea of what is true belonging and how can we be of the consumer's community?
Well, the way I approached writing the book was to really build my research around these ideas of these constant human truths. And what is the role that a company can practically play in that world? And when it came to belonging, I was really quite skeptical. I know, you know, people can feel like they belong to a church, they can belong to a sporting organization or to an alumni association with a university, but can you really feel like you belong with a company? And sort of my hypothesis was no, but I was wrong because there are plenty of people who really love being associated with different brands, who want to be part of the brand, who want to be part of the company, who they long to be acknowledged and involved in these companies and these brands. And one of the sort of symbols I used in my research was stickers on laptop computers. And to me, a laptop computer or a smartphone is so precious and such an important like extension of our being that that symbolically putting a sticker on a laptop is a symbol of belonging. You're telling the world, I trust this company so much, they're part of who I am, they're never going to let me down. And so that sort of helped me explore, well, who are these companies and what does it mean and how do they do that? And as I got into this, Hunter, this had such a profound impact on me because we have a belonging crisis in our world. The more time that we spend online and on social media, the more lonely, the more isolated, the more depressed people feel. This is not my opinion. This has been verified by a profound amount of research. People are lonely. They're crying out to belong, to connect. And as I reflected on what does marketing mean in this new world of this consumer rebellion, I really come down to this, Hunter, that increasingly, as advertising becomes less important or less impactful because we see less of it, we believe less of it, and companies are trying to find, well, how do we connect? What's new? What's replacing this? Belonging is going to be big. It's going to be powerful. It might be one of the last things we have left in our companies. And, you know, it's not for everybody. You don't necessarily need to belong to somebody who, you know, makes hamburgers or cuts your grass. But for important brands, it is serving a need. On this human emotional scale. And I look for more of it in the future.
Mark Schaefer is talking to us about human values. And one of them is to feel a meaningful sense of belonging. As human beings, we all feel the desire to belong. That could be to a community, a movement, an ideology, or even to a brand in the way that Mark's discussing it. At Economics for Entrepreneurs, we're creating a community too, of people similar to you, fellow entrepreneurs, whose interests, challenges, and ambitions are likely very similar to yours. If you feel a desire to belong to a community of your entrepreneurially minded peers, we encourage you to join our email list by visiting e4epod.com/mind, M-I-N-D. You'll get a copy of our first free ebook for signing up, But more importantly, you'll become part of a growing new community of people just like you. And with you, we'll aim to make belonging to it meaningful by sharing knowledge, information, tools, and experiences. Now back to our discussion with Mark. And you attach that analysis, Mark, which is very profound, with the consumer's search for meaning. And you even talk about a meaning economy, and you have a phrase that meaning is the new money, meaning is the new marketing. Can you expand on that? Can you tell us a little bit more precisely how belonging and meaning can be attached to each other, how they can go together?
Well, I really appreciate the very insightful questions I had, and I have to just tell you, Hunter, how much I appreciate that you've really read and immersed yourself in my ideas and book, in my book, because you really are pointing out some of the very deep ideas. And, you know, this was something that really surprised me, and loyalty is really evaporating in this world. And this is a cataclysmic change just in the last 25 years, the idea of loyalty and consumer loyalty. And I point to research from McKinsey, from Accenture, from Deloitte that basically says consumers they don't want to be loyal. They want to shop around. They want freedom. They want to make the choices. But there's one area that still can make people very dramatically loyal, and that's this idea of shared meaning, shared values. So, you know, one example that was actually occurring right when I was writing this chapter of the book is Nike's position with the polarizing American football quarterback Colin Kaepernick. To some, he was a civil rights hero. To others, he was a polarizing individual who was acting in an unpatriotic way. They built a brand. They introduced a line of clothing and shoes associated with Colin Kaepernick, and some segments of the American population were literally burning Nike gear in the streets. Nike lost $4 billion of market value in one day. Now, they made that back and more within 10 days, but it was a very unusual marketing ploy. And here's what was happening. Before we can expect consumers to be loyal to us, we have to show that we're loyal to them. We have to live on their island, live in their world, in their community. And we have to take a stand and show what we stand for, even if it means isolating other groups. Whenever we were going through this, I got into this discussion with this fella. He's like, 45-year-old white guy in Indianapolis, very overweight, not an athletic person. He said, I'll never buy Nike gear again. I said, they don't care. Yep. He said, no, you don't understand. I'll never buy their gear again. And I said, I'm telling you, they don't understand because you're not on their island. But they know the consumers who support their brand, the values that they stand for, and they are making a play toward loyalty. Now, here's something I did not have in the book, which was sort of insider information, that I learned that Adidas, Nike's big competitor, or if in Europe, mm-hmm. Adidas, mm-hmm. they were in negotiations with Colin Kaepernick at the same time.
Oh, wow.
Right? Because they had the same research mm-hmm. in front of them trying to connect with the same consumers. And so by doing something like that, by showing up in that community in a bold way and in an authentic way, which is important, that creates loyalty. Now, that's not for everybody, and you don't have to be polarizing really to take a stand. You can take a stand on something that's unifying and uplifting. But so it's treacherous territory but it's something that we're seeing more and more with big companies today.
Yeah, a real challenge. And as you say, it presents the marketer with some choices that they have to make. Let's turn the dial a little bit to what went wrong, Mark. So we've talked about human values. We've talked about understanding the consumer. You made reference to my ancient history in marketing when mom was my consumer. We tried very, very...
That was very relevant history, sir.
We tried very, very hard to understand mom, not just I was selling detergent, but we tried to understand her challenges in bringing up her kids and all of the, you know, her life, mm-hmm. not just her laundry. Mm-hmm. But now marketing technology tends to focus on numbers and things that can be measured, even if they're not the right things to measure. They've kind of eaten marketing, if we use Mark Andreessen's phrase, that they're not emotional connections. Mm-hmm. So track for us how your research showed you that marketing's gone on the wrong track and how technology dragged us there, if you like.
Well, I think the best example is not probably not as a piece of research, but a story from one of my favorite marketers. This is Martin Lindstrom, who is the author of a book called Small Data, and really someone I admire. So Martin had a story, which I included in the book, where he gave a speech in front of 5,000 marketing executives in New York City. And he said, how many of you have had a conversation with one of your customers in the last year? And out of 5,000 people, 19 people raised their hand. Hmm. I don't need any research. That shows what the problem is.
All right.
So if you compare that to your days in marketing, where you were practically living in the homes of your mm-hmm. customers,
yeah.
which is what Martin Lindstrom does, by the way, you know, it just shows a marketing really industry that's just out of touch and just focused on the wrong things. I think there's also sort of an institutional paralysis that's happening here, which I didn't talk about in the book really, but it's something that I think is holding a lot of these bad practices in place. I had a conversation last week with a very experienced marketer in Europe, and he works with a lot of big brands. They said, Mark, you know, what I don't understand is that when you read your book and you see this sort of wake-up call, this reality check of where the world is today, and yet I'm working with all these big brands, and they're not moving, they're not changing. You can read the book, you can understand the changes, but it's just not happening. And one of the things I think is just we've built in this institutional paralysis with, let's say, like our relationships with advertising agencies. Advertising agencies sell ads. We know how that works. We can measure them on a quarterly basis, which is linked to our quarterly sales goals. We like to be wined and dined in New York City by our advertising friends. We don't want to change that. It's comfortable. We like these ads because we can take them home and show people what we do for a living. We can show them to our boss and be proud of that. A lot of the marketing activities that are associated with this new way of doing business, something like experiential marketing, word of mouth marketing, some of these other ideas that we need to be thinking about as we move into this more human-centered way of doing things, they don't neatly fit on the old dashboards. There's a quote in the book from a leader, one of the founders of the Giant Spoon Agency. He said, look, you can either keep up with the pace of culture or you can measure. You probably can't do both. There's not many established companies in the world today ready to accept that, ready to adopt that. And so almost, you know, by definition, they're going to fall behind, perhaps even become obsolete unless they catch up where consumers are today. So it's a frustrating world.
And it seems to me, Mark, that a lot of marketing has become mechanistic as opposed to human. And there's a couple of examples of that. You mentioned them both in your book. One is the idea of the sales funnel, which is very inhuman, I think. And another one that struck me that you mentioned is engagement, which implies an emotional connection if someone is engaged. Mm-hmm. What it really means is you send them an email and they click on it, which in fact could be more annoying than it is engaging. So tell us about that mechanistic kind of trend in marketing.
I agree with you. And I think a lot of that trend, again, is sort of rooted in this idea that it's measurable and it fits in a dashboard. So something like a Facebook-like, or as you said, a click, you know, a click-through rate or something like that. That is something that's it's quantifiable. It's comfortable. We can understand that. We can put that on a chart. But the relationship with companies and brands that consumers are expecting today doesn't necessarily fit in a quarterly sales plan. And it might take time and it might be messy and it might involve marketing activities that are not immediately measurable, you know, or at least we can't attribute what might occur there to a specific sale. That is so hard. Look, I'm uncomfortable with that. Mm-hmm. I'm a data junkie. I'm a measurement junkie. And yet I see the reality of the situation. And we've got to start experimenting in some of these other areas and not be so locked in to tradition.
Yeah, we concur with that. The dynamism of experimentation and finding out what works and trying new things is very much to the fore, I think, in how we think. And then you have an alternative. You instead of these mechanistic, while measurable, techniques, you talk about amassing human impressions as opposed to these ad impressions or other forms of measurable impressions. Give us a couple of examples of human impressions, Mark, and then tell us whether they're measurable or not, or should we not even try to measure them?
Well, I think the measurement will catch up. I mean, absolutely, I do. And I have an event where I bring together 30 marketing thought leaders a couple times a year called The Uprising. And at our last event, this idea of measurement was a very big idea because, you know, marketing professionals know that things are changing. And we brought in a measurement expert, and what she said is, look, you know, you have to be experimenting in some of these different areas. And we can't really use history as our guide. But what we can measure is we can say, all right, what would be our expectation? If this were successful, what would be our expectation? What would have happened? And if that happened, then double down on it. And, you know, pursue it until we have some history where we'll be able to have some attribution. In the book, I'm not really prescriptive, and I'm very careful about that because, you know, I approach marketing and consulting and writing in a very humble way. That look, you know, I'm not the expert in your business and your industry, and I can't tell you what to do. But I can give you a map to say, you know, the world is sort of covering this kind of map today. Let's find a direction that might make sense for you. So in the later chapters of the book, I actually introduce lots of different ideas, lots of different ways that companies are connecting with consumers in a more human way. And the foundational concept is that today we have to give up on the idea that we're in control. I show that 2/3 of our marketing is occurring without us. The customer is the marketer. And this suggests a new mindset for successful marketing where it's not us trying to control a message, it's us trying to get into that 2/3, to earn our way into that 2/3 so that customers are talking about our products and our services.
You do say, though, Mark, that we've got to overcome a big loss of trust to get there. You say we burned through trust. Marketing content isn't trusted. And you tell us it's number 7 in your 10-point manifesto. You've got to transcend the public's mistrust of your company through relentless honesty. So tell us about that trust problem.
Well, I do. And I also realized that I didn't completely answer your last question about human impressions, but these kind of go together. Mm-hmm. So there's research that comes out every year from Edelman called the Edelman Trust Barometer. And they just came out with their latest research, and it shows that more or less for 11 years in a row around the world, trust in businesses and brands and advertising have declined. Who do people trust? They trust each other. They also trust founders, technical experts, business leaders, of course, friends and family. So they trust each other. Mm-hmm. And so we have to think about increasingly the personal brand. This is where we get into the human impressions. The personal brand becomes the brand. If people don't see our ads, if they don't believe our ads, if they don't believe our messaging, because they know we're just trying to increase our stock price, you know, they don't really believe what we're saying, but they believe each other. If those stories are being told by employees in our company, by people in our community, by other founders and business leaders, that's where the trust belongs. That's where the trust is going to occur today. And, you know, so again, it's sort of like flips things, you know, completely upside down in terms of the traditional marketing model, where a brand used to be, this is what we tell you we are. Today, a brand is what people tell each other you are. And so you can't ignore that. That is where the power is happening. That's where the sales are happening. And so we've got to acknowledge this reality and adjust to it.
This idea of the customer as the marketing department is very promising. We have another idea that is generated through our research, Mark, and I'd love to get your comments on it because it's in the same kind of space. And business schools talk about firms creating value. And what our research tells us is it's the customer who creates value, because value is an experience. I feel good about the transaction or the experience I've just had. It occurs entirely in the consumer or the customer's domain. Only they can know their own feelings and preferences and values and goals. And so logic says that they create value, and our job is to try and figure out how to be invited in, as you say, how to facilitate that value. Does that sound like it fits with your research and your thinking?
It does. It does, absolutely. And there's a book that was written, and I'm sorry, I can't remember the name of the book or the author, but a friend of mine who's a marketing executive in Atlanta, Keith Jennings, has written on my blog about this idea, is that of consumers hiring your product for a job to be done. So it's sort of like the value creation is occurring at the consumer level. So I was recently working with a really cool company that's growing very, very quickly. They have these really delicious, it's called New Orleans Shaved Ice. The company's called Pelican Snowballs. They're growing all over America really quickly. So we're talking about, you know, this idea of how do we connect to the consumers. And we went through this exercise about what is the job people hire one of these delicious treats to do. It could be a reward for good grades. It could be for a reward because I completed my workouts this week. It could be a place to bring your dogs because they have dog snow cones and puppy treats and big areas. You know, it could be a place to have a dog birthday party. So it's not just a dessert or a treat. you know, you're hiring it for a specific thing to do. And if you start organizing your marketing around that, then it sort of amplifies those feelings and sort of validates that consumer value.
Yeah, and we try to cultivate a skill, we call it, which is empathy, the ability to do what you just described, to get inside the consumer's head and feel like they feel, think like they think. We believe it's a skill you can cultivate, at least, although some people might disagree with that. And it might be the reason why corporations can't see the customer through the customer's own eyes. Is empathy a promising area to pursue?
Well, I think it's an amazing opportunity to pursue, but you know it's going to be impossible unless the marketing function reconnects with consumers. You know, I gave that example of, you know, the 19 marketers raising their hand, and I think the CMO function is under attack. You know, if you look at the headlines, you know, number one, many big companies are eliminating the CMO function. You know, the tenure of the CMO in a company is typically the shortest, maybe 18 months, of anybody else in the C-suite. Now, you contrast this with, you know, what my, you know, my mentor and one of my teachers was the great American author and consultant, Peter Drucker. Peter Drucker says, you know, marketing is the distinguishing differentiator in your company. Marketing and innovation is the core of your company. Everything else is overhead. I believe that. If you don't have customers and nurture and retain customers, you're not going to have anything. It drives everything in your company. Now, if Peter Drucker's right, why is marketing under attack? And it's because of just what you're suggesting here, is that somehow, you know, marketing has become political. It's become obsessed with technology. It's not about empathy. It's not representing the customer to every function in your organization. It's about holding on to the old ways and holding on to the old dashboards. And that's where this you know, problem is occurring today, where this angst is occurring today, this dissonance, because the traditional role of the CMO and the traditional expectations of the CMO do not fit what the market demands today.
One of the strains of thought, though, Mark, that you see in organizational theory now is that marketing shouldn't be a function. It should be a focus that permeates the whole company and all of the company's processes. And that seems a little bit consistent with what Drucker said, that there's no distinction between marketing and management in general. So you think marketing will survive as a function, or will it be organized in a different way so it permeates the whole firm?
I think the pace of change in marketing will not only sort of keep it as a separate function, I think it will reinforce it as a separate function. So I don't see that happening. I mean, there still has to be leadership somewhere. Some person has to be assessing the landscape and saying, look, there's been this shift. The biggest problem destroying value in companies today is that people are following a playbook that's 5 years old, or 3 years old, or 2 years old. And I see this a lot in this space of, you know, content marketing has been one of the big buzzwords, right? Now, let's say, for example, content marketing is everybody's job in the company, right? It's just impractical because it's changing so much. And the way content marketing worked 3 years ago is completely different than the way content works today. The way SEO works today is completely different from how SEO worked 3 years ago. There is a cataclysmic change occurring right now in trackable ads, which is the backbone of the marketing function for many companies, all right? There's got to be someone leading this, who's observing this and assessing very rapidly which way do we go. There's just no way, I don't think, that can be distributed in a company.
And the CMO's role would be to know those trends, to try and get ahead of them, to get the news of all those trends embedded in the rest of the company. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, today it's all about speed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't have marketing by committee necessarily. Right. You've got to have someone who knows the company well enough and, you know, practically assess the political reality and the bureaucracies, who know the customers well enough, who know the competitors well enough to be able to know, here's an opportunity for leverage and we need to drive through this hole as fast as we can. Or here has been an area of leverage that's disappearing for us. We need to, you know, open up some other opportunity and we need to do it fast. I mean, speed is essential to business today. And you've got to have someone who's on top of things and decisive. It's a great question, though. I'm probably going to turn that into a blog post, Hunter.
Well, good. Please do. I saw a definition of marketing the other day that was seemed a little bit different. It came from the Hanken School of Business in one of the Nordic countries. They developed this idea. They call it customer dominant logic, which I think is aligned with the way you think. And they said that marketing.
Ooh, I'm sort of loving that.
Well, it's an interesting set of papers and everything. I'd be happy to share some with you.
Yeah, I'd like that.
Okay. Their definition of marketing, they called it promise management. And what they meant is you've got to understand customers sufficiently well to understand what kind of a promise would be relevant to them to make them invite you in, as you say. And then it's got to be valid. It's got to serve the customer's purpose. And you've got to keep it every time. And the management of your company is about managing your promises. What do you think of that?
I think that's completely aligned with the human-centered approach that I have in my book, and it's definitely the mindset I have in my business every single day. I've built my business by establishing authority and establishing, you know, a certain responsibility with my readers and. You know, it seems weird to say it, but fans, I mean, there are fans of my book and my blog and my podcast. And when I create content, when I put my views out into the world, Hunter, there's only one thing in my mind. I will never let you down. When you connect with me, it will be real. It will be worth your time. It will be interesting. It may even be entertaining, but I will never let you down. And the day I let you down is the day you're going to switch to somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
I think the chronic problem we see today in business is this arrogance where they take consumers for granted. And if you look at what's going on in many of the tech companies today, and almost all of the tech failures today, it's because of this internal arrogance. And I'd put Facebook right at the top of the list.
Mm-hmm.
We see examples where Facebook has done experiments manipulating their customer emotions through changes in the newsfeed, trying to see if they can make them feel happier or make them feel sadder based on, I mean, it's just unbelievable how arrogant some of these companies are, how disrespectful they are. You look at the whole idea. We talked a few minutes ago about these trackable cookies that create these ads that follow you all around. And the unbelievable things that people are doing to breach our confidentiality and abuse our privacy is just mind numbing. They're going to get caught. They're going to lose. They're going to go down. And if you're building a company based on practices that people hate or that are going to creep people out or abuse their privacy. You've got to stop right now. And you've got to say, all right, you know, what do customers love? What do customers need? What are they crying out for? What is their experience? You know, what are their unmet and underserved needs? Why do we exist for those needs? You've got to get ahead of this consumer curve. The consumers are in control. The consumers are the marketers. We have to connect with them on their terms.
Well, Mark, thank you for that summary. It's tremendously elegant and persuasive, and there are lessons for everybody to learn. So I will link to the book. I recommend to everybody who's listening to get it. I'm a great Kindle user, and I like to use the highlight capability in there. And your book on my Kindle is more yellow highlights than it is unhighlighted. There's so much in it. So it's Marketing Rebellion, The Most Human Company Wins by Mark Schaefer. And you've already done a great summary, but just let me ask you for one last word. You finish the book by telling us all as marketers to, it's three words separated by bullet points, be more human. And just summarize that for our smaller company entrepreneurs, Mark. We've talked about Nike and we've talked about Procter & Gamble and so on, but we've got a lot of small business owners and startup entrepreneurs listening. Just summarize, be more human for them.
Well, I think this is the beauty of being a small business or a small business owner today, is that you are ideally positioned to win, because increasingly the personal brand is the brand. People know you as a human being, and that's what they think about you, about your company. And what this means, be more human, is to think through every opportunity that you have to connect with your customers, every email, look at your website, your customer service, when you have a meeting or the order taking process. How can we create more opportunities to show our face, show our smile, show our heart, talk about the passion that we have for what we do and the passion that we have for serving our customers? Those are the human impressions. They're going to beat the advertising impressions. And that's what's going to win in this new marketing world.
Well, Mark, thank you very much. This has been wonderful. I think perhaps if I can reschedule in the future, you can come and talk to us about personal branding and from your book Known. But we'll leave that to the future. And today, we'll thank you for your tremendous contribution and insights in our podcast. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. I enjoyed it.
Economics for Entrepreneurs is a production of the Mises Institute. To explore more content like this, visit Mises.org. That's Mises.org. For more from Hunter Hastings, check out HunterHastings.com.